Welcome to the Maria Heller Show. On the net since 2000 and still going strong. If you feel like you're not getting the real news, if you feel like you're not connected spiritually, you have found your home. Maria covers a wide range of topics as only a snarky New Yorker can. Straight up, no chaser. No censorship, no corporate sponsors, thus true freedom of speech. Your subscription gives you unlimited access as a member of the smartest audience on earth. Relax and enjoy the education. Now, here's Maria.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to the show. Today is The Bigger Picture, the most important show probably I do all month, to keep us separated from the insanity of this illusion. And it's hard to believe sometimes that it is an illusion, but that's the truth of it. Anyway, my co-host and good friend is Michael Rakir. He's with me, and I have his brand new book in my grubby little hands, and it arrived on Monday, and I couldn't wait. I mean, I think as soon as I ripped the package open, I sat down and went through at least two chapters, and the book is called The Spaces Between, Unseen Forces That Shape Your Life. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Maria. Great to be back with you.
Well, I got to tell you, it's always good to have you on the show. You're a good reminder for me when I step away from the ugliness that I cover every day, that none of this is real. And I have to tell you, reading this book, not only was I reading it kind of furiously, but I was also jotting down notes all over the place. So my used books always have the cliff notes in the margins. So one of my friends says she loves reading the books after I read them because I've got it highlighted perfectly.
Makes them more valuable, Maria. Your edition.
Well, I'm glad you actually signed this one for me, so thank you for that.
Oh, my pleasure. I remembered at last.
I'm glad you did. You know, reading this book, you know, I often say when I'm sitting with people I trust, okay, I don't tell people everything I know because people would never be able to handle what I know. And then I started reading your book and I was like, hot damn, here it is. Another book I don't have to write that I can thank Michael for suffering for 2 years to bring it through. And I don't mean to laugh, but, you know, this is totally different so far. And I can only judge by the first four chapters because that's where I'm at. But it's certainly different and yet the same from what you've written before. But there's a depth to this that I think is going to surprise quite a few people.
Yes, it is the concluding book. We now have enough information from Joseph to do all we need to do to make the change that we need to make. And I think we've come to a time where we don't want the books. They've never been entertainment. But sometimes they can be treated as entertainment with somebody breathlessly waiting for the next book. And that's not the point of them. The point of them is to absorb the information that's in them, to live that information, and to change things. And I think this is why this last book is such a startling read, mm-hmm. Where Joseph is saying, you think you know your position in the world, you think you know your position in the universe, you think that the material world is all there is, you think that you are the dominant species. You don't know anything at all about all of those areas. What actually exists in what he describes as the spaces between, the gaps that we perceive between ourselves and the empty spaces of this world and the empty spaces of space, the empty spaces of the planet, are anything but empty spaces. They are filled with spiritual life. They are filled with spiritual intent. Some of it positive, some of it negative, but all of it needing to be understood and acknowledged if we are to live our lives as the spiritual people that we really are.
Exactly. Well, you know, you and I have talked about the space in between on previous shows where I did not see this book, and I know it kind of freaked you out because I was like jumping ahead of you. But, you know, my teacher, Sun Bear, before he left the planet, one of the things he used to say is there's no place on this planet that you can put your foot down where there isn't a spirit standing there.
Yes.
And, you know, one of the other positive things he used to say, which I enjoyed, was, you know, if people knew what walked alongside them at all times, they'd never feel alone.
Absolutely.
What I like about the book is how you did a quick synopsis of two of your books on the same page.
Oh, right. Did I?
Well, you did. You probably didn't see it that way, but as somebody that's reviewed thousands of books for the past 20 years, I was like, okay, he just took the book about the fall and the book about the field and put them in two paragraphs on the same page, which I thought was excellent.
Well, they're referred to in each book, and the fall is the basis of all that's wrong here that needs to be put right. And so it needs to be summed up before any of the books from the fall onwards are read in order to have that backdrop against which the book unfolds, you know.
Exactly.
But it
was good that you put it in here in the Cliff Notes version of it for people that haven't read your other books. So when you are referring
to Shakespeare.
Right. So when you are referring to the field and the fall, it's very easy to understand what you're talking about because you said that in the book.
Yeah.
So the difference between the field and the fall is a huge one. The field is my interpretation. The field of energy that we're living in, the field of energy around the planet, the one that I send Reiki to every night. And the fall is basically how we got to this stage of darkness that we're on this planet.
Absolutely right. You've condensed it even further, Maria.
I always like shortcuts. Shortcuts make it easy for people to get it. When you look around at the world and, you know, I hear from a lot of people, you know, they're very depressed, they're sad, they're this and that. And I tell them, well, you know, the planet is right now set to negative energy. And I mean, it just seems to be amping up, amping up, amping up. And I assume as the negative energy amps up, the field continues to shrink or get even more negative.
Yes, because we're dealing with a finite amount of energy. We've forgotten that in order to cleanse the field, in order to put positive energy into it, we need to draw energy from that well that's within ourselves. And instead, we look for our energy, we look for our emotional state, we look for our spiritual state outside of ourselves, within the field of energy, the field of negative energy. It can't continue to sustain us. It sustains us in a negative form, but it can't continue to sustain us because we're drawing on that field of energy only, which is one of the core messages of the books, that in order to change things, we have to go within and discover that point at which we are one with divinity. And at that point, there is light, light that can be drawn out from our center, from our heart center, and light that can be projected outwards from us to reinfuse the field with positive energy, to reinfuse the field with light, to chase away that negativity that's been there since the time of the fall, and to put things right. It's pointless as looking at things and saying, aren't they awful? Yes, they are awful, and we have to acknowledge that something needs to change. But in acknowledging totally that they are awful, we reinforce their state of being awful. We have to say, look, things are not as they should be. Let's change them to how they should be. And we are each of us a soldier for the light, a pinpoint for the light, a connection to the light, and we can do immense good. We can do great works in changing this world if we will only go within and if we will only visualize and believe in our visualization of a better world. Believe in our visualization of peace, of harmony, of wellness. But we have to do something. That's the message in the books, and that's why this is the last book. We can't entertain ourselves with the books. We have to do something. Mm-hmm. And there is only one thing to do. The thing to do is to recognize who we are, is to go within, and is to bring out that light and visualize as the creative spirits that we truly are, that better world that existed before the time of the fall, and to reinstate it through that transmission of light. Against what we're seeing, against the negativity, to say, yep, you're there today, but you're not going to be there tomorrow. I'm changing things.
Exactly. Well, listen, if ever there was a time for us to reevaluate how we live on this planet, that time is now.
Indeed it is.
You know, I mean, every day I see, you know, people don't realize, and perhaps you don't know either, Michael, But before I got into radio, which was never my intention, maybe it was on another level, but not in my conscious state, I was an avid environmentalist. And the reason I started doing the show was when George Bush Jr. was going to run for president. My knowing said, you have to stop. You have to stop this person. You have to start covering this stuff because this will be the end of the environment. And it's almost every day I see, you know, stories of, you know, either it's the huge amount of garbage in the ocean, it's some other animal going extinct, you know, a whale being pulled out, stuffed with plastic, polluted waters, polluted skies. And, you know, I've been talking about that kind of stuff for 40 years. You know, when you look at it, you know, for me, I had to look at, well, who are the beings behind this? What is it that prompts them to destroy this beautiful planet? Your work, you know, your work covers a lot of that. You know, people may think what you do and I do are two different things, but they're one and the same.
Yes, it is. You've touched on the oneness of all things there. And we are destroying ourselves. As you say, there's a species disappears every single day. And this world has been put together originally to function perfectly. And it is dependent on all those life forms intermeshing and being connected to each other and performing different functions that keep the planet in a state of energy that it should be in. And we are destroying those creations. We are destroying part of ourselves. There's only one organism across this world, and it's us. And us in the sense of us being everything. So the meat that we eat, the insects that we crush, the forests that we cut down are all part of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we are becoming sicker and more negative and feeling dreadful about our lives because we are destroying ourselves. If I harm you, I harm myself.
Right.
If I think I think badly about someone, I'm thinking badly about myself. So we are constantly attacking ourselves, and we have to stop. We have to start caring. We have to realize that every expression of life is valuable. Every expression of life is vital. And every expression of life deserves our respect, including, of course, the entire planet.
Right.
As you say, we pollute the entire planet. I'm always amazed, and I know I've said this before, but I'm always amazed if I pull up at some traffic lights and the car in front, the window winds down and somebody throws a cigarette onto the ground.
Right.
Or you find areas where people have, I don't know what they call it in the States, but it's called fly tipping here. Where rubbish is just dumped into the countryside. We are dumping those things. We are mistreating a living being, a living spirit.
Right.
One of the most important living spirits that we connect with, because that spirit, through generosity and through love, allows us to partake in this journey. Without the earth, there is no journey. And we treat the earth shabbily. We treat it as though it doesn't matter. And it's time to reverse that. It's time to wake up with love and harmony sent towards the planet, to respect every aspect of life. Otherwise, we're on the fast track to the end for us.
Absolutely.
On a physical level.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I hate to say it, but I see that every day in a lot of news stories that I cover. You know, so many different things, you know, dumping coal ash in our rivers, you know, spraying it in the chemtrails, you know, the ice melt, you know, Alaska this week was 50 degrees warmer than it should be. You know, and you think about it, you know, would you throw garbage and dirt and pollute if your mother's sleeping, you know, if your mother's laying in the bed and you're having a snack, are you throwing your garbage on top of your mother? And people don't understand that that's exactly what we're doing to this planet.
Yes.
And it can't go on for long. Okay, I wanted to shift this a little bit. Obviously, this is your last book. And when I read it, I felt sad and I felt happy for you. Okay?
Oh, thank you.
I felt sad for me and happy for you. Honestly, I understand the reason you already gave. But this also puts a tremendous amount of stress on your physical body, to be able to channel through the way that you do. And, you know, you and I aren't getting any younger, so our workload makes it even more difficult.
Absolutely right. I was amused yesterday in that the two wonderful ladies who are handling our Facebook accounts for us placed a cover photograph of me on, taken in a wood. Jane and myself were in Scotland, and it was 10 years ago. And it was great because Facebook friends were saying, "You look so refreshed, Michael."
All right.
You're obviously coming back to health, Michael. And it's great to see you back on top. And I have to say, I'm sorry, folks, but those of you who are coming to, we're having a signing day for the book at the end of April. And those of you who are coming to the signing day are bound to be disappointed because the photograph was taken 10 years ago. There's been 10 years of trance since then.
Right. I understand. Believe me, we have to use our Dear Abby pictures. I don't know if you know who Dear Abby was in America. But she used to
I've heard the phrase, but I'm not familiar.
She used to do one of these advice columns in every newspaper out there, she and her twin sister. And they always used their picture from when they were like 30, even though they were like 70 or 80 later on. So it's kind of like online dating when everybody puts up pictures of themselves that doesn't even resemble what they look like now. I'm glad, like I said, you deserve the rest you get, but I know you're not going to be resting. You're going to be promoting your work. And I don't, you know, okay, like I said, I haven't finished the whole book, but I could understand there comes a time where, you know, there's nothing left to say.
Yes. And as Joseph says, he's brought through the information before. Not to this society, but to the society before this society. And the reason for the books is for the books to be acted upon, for the information in the books to be acted upon. They're not just there to put on a shelf. They're there to read. And if people want to reject them, that's fine. That's absolutely fine. But for those who are interested and do feel a resonance with the books, there is work to be done. And as you say, my work has not ended. And Joseph hasn't gone anywhere. He described me as being hardwired to him recently, and that in interview situations or in situations where I don't know the answer or I'm not explaining it lucidly enough, then he will step in and expand on the themes that are being questioned, the things that are being spotlighted. So Joseph and myself are still, if you like, a double act. And we'll go on being a double act until I leave this sphere. So there is a lot of work to be done yet. And whilst I've been bringing the books through, there hasn't been the time to promote them. So it's great to have the information through, but we've got to get the knowledge that this information is available to as many souls as possible within our lifetimes. So no rest for the wicked, as they say, Maria.
I understand. Well, one of the things about this book that's very different, besides talking about how there is no space in between, which might make some people a little nervous, but I often try to remind people that the way spirit sees us is usually as balls of light. They're not like peeking on you in the shower to see your private parts. Because people worry about that. And I'm like, okay. But, you know, here in Arizona, you know, and with a lot of Native tribes, when they do what they call a sweat lodge and call in their ancestors or, you know, spirit beings, the spirit beings come in as colored balls of light. And the way that the natives see them is the way spirit sees us. So people really don't have to worry if you're overweight, if you didn't shave your legs, if you forgot to comb your hair. That's not what's important. And what's important is your light and your vibration.
Absolutely.
So your books are all about raising your vibration.
Yes, yes. Because, of course, we can be having the spiritual equivalent of a bad hair day. That signature light that you've just been talking about, Maria, shows everything that we are. That is when we are laid naked, and not in a physical sense, but in a spiritual sense. So the people who come to see us can read us via the light that we give off from our aura and from our energy points. And that light is as a result of the way that we think. It's a result of the way that we approach others. And it's a result of how we have acted up to this point in our existence. So, you know, if we feel that our light is a little dim, then we should be working to polish it up. I remember my spiritual teacher used to be appalled when older people were arguing, or when older people were spending so much of their time addressing the cares of the world and investing in them as though they would always be here. Mm-hmm. And she used to say to them, look, I'm not going to argue with you. For the good of my soul, I refuse to argue. But also, at your age, and bearing in mind we're all on a one-way street, shouldn't you be thinking about what she described as the next place and preparing yourself for it? And that's not with a view to judgment, but with a view to enlightenment, so right. that we have absorbed enough spiritual knowledge to at least know what to expect and know what's coming next, so that we can react most favorably to what comes next and elevate ourselves through the spheres that exist beyond this one in terms of vibration.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when people ask me, you know, what's the best way to raise your vibration, you know, as a Reiki master for 30 plus years, you know, getting your Reiki attunement changes your vibration. It changes your light. It connects you to something else. So that automatically, just getting your attunements, automatically starts raising your vibration and also changing your vision and making you more multidimensional. You know, Michael, a lot of people talk about becoming multidimensional, but I don't think they really understand what that entails and what they'll be able to see, and a lot of what they'd be able to see is what's in those spaces between.
Yes, yes. And there is that that famous cliche in many films, isn't there? You want to hear the truth? You're not ready for the truth.
Right, you can't, you can't handle the truth. Right, you can't handle the truth. Well,
you can't handle the truth, yeah.
Right.
The equivalent is that you want to raise your vibration, but you have to be prepared for what you discover when you raise your vibration. It isn't all sweetness and light, just as it isn't all sweetness and light here. You have to raise your vibration with a view to connecting with the highest light, with the highest intent, with angelic intent,
mm-hmm.
And not simply to say, I've seen a spirit, or
right.
I've had a spiritual experience.
Right.
You have to be choosy in your reason for wanting to raise your vibration. It's not to belong to some club. It's to re-energize yourself with your core divine energy, to realize that you are an angelic being, and this is the important part, to have the scales fall from your eyes. Because once you, as we know, once you raise your vibration, you can't go back. And you see this world in an entirely different way.
Absolutely.
And if you're not prepared for that, then don't open the book. Don't open the books.
If you
are prepared for that,
right.
and are prepared to work and to change and to realize what you are and to realize what needs to be done here, open the books.
Exactly. You know, one of the things that I've suggest to people, because I know you strongly suggest meditation, but even when anybody's doing any kind of spiritual work, even if they're doing body work on someone else, to always call in the highest, brightest, white light beings there are. Because to just say, you know, come on, anybody, jump on in, is a form of ignorance where you can draw to yourself a lot of negative energies and a lot of negative spirits that also exist in the spaces in between.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
Up till now, you're
and are waiting.
Right, go ahead.
And are waiting to connect to you in a negative way. So if you are angry, connection to one of those spirits will make you angrier. If you are depressed, connection to one of those spirits will make you more depressed. If you are upset about someone, connection to one of those spirits will make you hate that someone. So as you say, you have to be careful and on your guard at all times, and you have to connect to the highest and the best. And the highest and the best is not a matter of reaching out, it's a matter of reaching in.
Mm.
And to have that dialogue with the divinity that you really are, and to ask in all situations as to how to act, for the help that you need and what to do. I mean, sometimes as spiritual workers, we perhaps think, well, I know what to do with this person. No, you don't. Each person is a precious spirit, and there are a different set of instructions that need to be observed. So if you're dealing with someone, if you're dealing with a material situation or a spiritual situation, ask. Don't think you know, because every situation is different. And you do not know what's connected to that person in the spaces between. You don't know what influences are around them that right. could also influence you if your light is not of a higher vibration. So that at the beginning of each day, I say, Father, I know nothing. I have no idea what to do. I'm completely lost, but you're not. So guide me, please. Protect me, please. Show me what I should do or what I shouldn't do. Mm-hmm. If you want me to do something, I'll do it. Right. If you want me to do nothing, I'll have the day off. But get that dialogue going with your greater self, with the divinity within, and become used to having that inspiration and that voice from the heart that advises you from a spiritual perspective rather than a material or a heart-mind perspective.
Right, right. Well, you know, here, you know, everybody, like we started out talking, we think that this is real and this is our normal life. This is our reality. But in truth, this is not our reality. And you kind of start the book off with that, like right away. You know, I'm looking at page 17 and you're already, there's different worlds and spheres you've never really, or we've been, but we don't remember. But there's, you know, and it's something you've said in your earlier books. There's so many better places to experience, you know, and to avoid the trap of reincarnation here. But people also have to realize, which so far you've made quite the impact in the surprise part of this book, that not everything is peachy keen out there. You know, there's not just, you know, angels with fiddles, you know, floating around on clouds. There's a lot of negative beings and a lot of negative thoughts. That also are floating around out there, and they tend to enter our brains and our thinking space and our physical space here on Earth.
Yes, indeed. Just before I go into that, I should correct myself. I think at the end of what I was saying earlier, I said heart-mind. I should have said head-mind.
Okay.
So if you're listening to this, I meant head-mind. We shouldn't be operating from the head-mind. We should be operating from the heart-mind. But yes, the unseen influences that can control our lives. I once took to a workshop a drawing of something, and I said, has anybody seen anything like this? And they said no. And I said, what do you think it is? And they said, it's a root vegetable. I said, no, it's not. This is one of the thought forms, the partially sentient thought forms that can attach to you. And it looks very much like a root vegetable, the way I've drawn it with tentacles and tubers and that type of thing. And these things can connect to your chakras. And once they're connected to your chakras, it's in their interest to keep you in a low state of vibration. In other words, if you're feeling depressed, one of these things can attach to you and can keep you depressed, because that lower level of energy, that lower level of light that you then emanate as someone who's depressed is a level that they can draw on, a level that can sustain them. Now, that sounds like a scary prospect, and it is. But there is a way to get rid of these things by bathing them in light, and there is a way to sense that they are around. But our point here is to say that not everything out there, as you've said, is sweetness and light. And many of these situations that exist on Earth are fueled by thought forms, by spirits who haven't moved on and haven't learnt any better, and by spirits whose interest it is to keep us in our depressed and violent and disharmonious state. Which is why I said earlier that as the scales fall from your eyes, there are some things out there that are not wonderful to behold. But once you realize that these things exist, you can arm yourself, you can divest yourself of these attachments, and you can be a far more effective spirit, angel, angelic being in terms of spreading the light than you were before you discovered what was actually out there.
Absolutely.
I think we should. I should add that the first half of the book describes some of the negative aspects of the spaces between. And the second half of the book describes the positive aspects and the glorious aspects and our own abilities as the angels that we really are. And it is a true uplifting statement of spiritual intent and spiritual fact. So Right. Don't be put off, folks, by us talking about negative things, but we have to. These things,
you have to be aware of it, right? You gotta be aware of it.
And we shouldn't close our eyes to it and stick our fingers in our ears and say, no, I don't want to hear
that. Right. Well, listen, through all these years that I've been teaching, I've come across a few students who always thought that they were strong enough, spiritual enough to start dealing with what they refer to as the dark side or the dark forces. And even though as their teacher, I would tell them, you are certainly not ready. You are certainly no match for what you're going up against. They would still do it, whether it was coming from ego, bravado, have no idea. And their entire lives would crash. And it wouldn't take long for that crash to happen. So you really have to be not only aware, but you have to be fully ready. I think before the show we were talking about, everybody's so anxious to go out of body, but they don't know how to do it right. They don't know how to shut down and protect their body from invasion. And then they don't know how to handle themselves if they come across something negative out in the ethers. So I've never recommended that unless you're sitting with a teacher that can actually walk you through it and save you in case something starts going bad.
Yes, yes. And over the years working as a medium, I've been called into all kinds of disturbed houses. And again, you have to know what you're doing, and you have to have the right people with you from the spirit side of life, from the spiritual side of life. And I've had people stand between me and, shall we say, uninformed spirits, and make sure that no harm comes to me. Mm-hmm. I've been threatened. I've been in very dark situations, but always I've listened to what I'm supposed to do in those situations and what I'm supposed to say and how I'm supposed to act, and have acknowledged that, again, I know nothing, but the people who work with me, the great shining beings who work with me, know how to handle these things. And I think there's a tendency to want to be a sort of Harry Potter at times.
Right.
We're up against this evil force, and we can wave a wand, and we can get rid of it.
Unless,
and that's not how it works.
Look, I've always had a very healthy respect for dark forces. And if anybody honestly believes, the Hollywood version of the guy in the white hat always wins, they're wrong. Or to think that, because you're of the light, that, you somehow have more power or whatnot than the people in the darkness. So it's like I said, I call it a healthy respect, and I keep myself as far away from them as possible.
Yes, unless called to act.
Well, that's
different.
If
you're called to act, then you will already be at the stage where the people that work with you know that you can handle the situation. But until that time, you do not go there.
No,
until that time, you send out the light. Because in sending out the light, you illuminate the minds of those who have not gone on,
right.
The minds of those who are negative. Without specifically connecting to them, you create a womb of light within which eventually they can examine their attitudes and their actions and decide to move on.
Absolutely.
So by all means, we must send out the light, but we mustn't engage with anything negative until we are at the stage where we know exactly what to do.
Right.
And in knowing exactly what to do, we have to move inwards and have that constant dialogue with the divine that tells us when to act and when not to act.
Exactly. About 25 years ago, I made the papers here in Arizona. I made the front page of the Arizona Republic a few times, because at that time I was doing what, people would understand, ghost busting. And when people called me to clear their space, let me tell you, Michael, I came up against some pretty ugly stuff. And it was very dangerous. It was physically dangerous. Of course, it was effective because, like you, I work with some pretty powerful ass-kicking beings in spirit. But I realized that it wasn't something that, at least it has no longer something that I'm willing to do. I just don't want to do it. Like, it's your ghost, it's your demon, you figure it out. Call your priest. I told one woman, you're Catholic, call your priest, let that demon jump in him. So, I know that sounds kind of weird, but it was like, man, I've had enough of that.
Yes.
And when you talk about in your book, you have a good name for these beings. You call them parasitical influences. And they are like parasites. As you said, they cling on to your chakra system. A lot of people are walking around, like I tell them, you know, you're walking around with your chakras wide open. What do you expect but to get attacked or drained when you're out in public?
Yes. I've come across the phrase from spiritual seekers at times. Of course I'm going to keep my chakras open. I want to send out the light. I want to be connected to everything. No, you don't. If they weren't able to close, then there'd be a reason for them being constantly open. The fact that they open and close suggests that there's a time for them to be open and a time for them to be closed. And so it is essential. That's one of the things that in spiritual circles often doesn't happen. It is essential that when you've been working spiritually, you close down your principal chakra system and seal it with light after you have stopped working for that time spiritually. Essential. Never go outside with the chakras open. Never go into a crowd with the chakras open. You'll pick up all sorts of influences from other people. You'll pick up their thoughts, their depressions, their emotions. Learn to use the chakra system properly when sending out the light.
Absolutely. And listen, there's plenty of books on chakras. There's plenty of information. You even have in this book how to clear your chakras. You know, sometimes some of my students will say, you know, I'm afraid to use my Reiki on other people. I don't want to catch whatever they have. And I'm like, okay, you might have skipped that lesson where I taught you how to protect yourself and to shut down your chakras. Because as a healer, it's not your business to take on somebody else's pain. You're just there to transmute the healing energy from the universe into them. So again, you know, in a lot of ways, when you're working spiritually, you really have to lose your ego.
Yes. Yes. At all times. At all times. And there's a temptation. I've seen it with mediums who like being on a platform and like having people thinking that they're something special. You're special in that you've chosen to undertake a spiritual mission, but the only way to make that mission succeed is to realize that you know nothing and the divinity within you knows everything. It's not about you becoming popular.
Right.
It's not about you making money. It's particularly not about you making money. It is about being of service. And if you have this strong volition to be of service, then you come here with that embedded into you as the person, the angel, the angelic being that you really are. So you have to pay homage to that. And you have to have a reality check every so often and think, am I getting too big for my boots?
Right.
Is this message being clouded by my impressions of what people should understand? And at that point, you have to retreat from that and say, no, it has to be a pure message from within. It isn't about me. It's about everybody else.
Exactly. Well, next life, I'm going to come in to receive and not serve. I'm going to just say, somebody peel me a grape. As soon as I get off this planet, I'm going to say, somebody peel me a grape. Michael, we need to take a short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Hi, Maria here. As you know, I always talk about spirituality being your only ticket out of here. You may or may not be familiar with Usui Reiki, but I've been a Usui Reiki master for almost 30 years. You may also not know that you can come in person and get your Reiki attunements with me anytime you'd like. I've had people fly here, even from another country, to get their Reiki attunements with me. Why? Because they trust me. Reiki is a wonderful thing, and it's the best way to develop your own intuition naturally. You don't need to do anything. The attunements start honing in on your intuition and developing it. It's great for self-healing. It's great for healing others, and it automatically starts to eliminate your karma. I do keep these sessions intimate. I've always taught it one-on-one, and that's the way I will continue to. So if you're interested in that, making a weekend out of it, that would be great. Just send me an email at maria@maria.net and we'll figure out the best time and how to do it. So remember what I always say, we are all here building our next house. Might as well use every tool available to us. Thanks. Okay, welcome back to The Bigger Picture with myself and Michael Rakia. You can get his books at josephspeaks.com. I don't know how many people I've recommended that website to. Not a one of them have ever said that they were disappointed. And once, if they go in and don't buy all your books, they end up eventually buying all your books. So that says a lot about the spiritual truth in your books, which I've never seen in anyone else's books, hands down, in my entire life.
Thank you.
Well, that's what put us together. I don't know whether that was good or bad for you, but I certainly enjoy having you with me all these years. You know, years ago, Carlos Castaneda put out a book that I don't even allow some of my students to read until I know they can handle it. Okay.
Right.
And God, what was it called? The Art of Dreaming. And in the book, Castaneda goes way beyond his little soft cover books. And he talked about some of the stuff in the spaces between things, not in the same way you do. But he talks about the inorganic beings that you can encounter when you're out there.
Yes.
And let me tell you something. When I read that, God, it had to be at least 30 years ago. It terrified me. Okay. It just terrified me. And I know people have to be at a certain level before they can handle that. But when I started reading your book, I thought about Castaneda's book. And I said, but this is so much more palatable. You know, I didn't feel like I had to put the book out on the porch while I went to sleep at night, not keep it in the house.
Well, that's Joseph for you. I mean, Joseph's mission is not to terrify anyone. Joseph's mission is to say, this is what's out there, and this is what's needed to put it right. And as you go through the book, you'll find that there is a huge amount of light in the book, a huge amount of direction for us spiritually, and a conclusion that helps people to send the light out effectively and to change things here. And that's what it's about. The reason that Joseph's come back again, as he says, again, is to make sure that we don't get it wrong again, put ourselves in stasis again, and he has to come through in millions of years' time when we've, come up from the primordial slime again physically,
right,
to try and get the same lesson across to us. We've trapped ourselves. We think this earth is all there is. We think this life is all there is. We think materiality is all there is. And we don't realize that we're trapped inside this bubble of an illusion that we have to break through at some stage. Otherwise, we're just repeating and repeating and repeating the same pattern. Except each time we repeat it, we dig ourselves a little deeper into materiality. And it becomes even harder for any spiritual intent, for any spiritual message to get through to us. So we have to get it right. We have to get out.
Right. Absolutely. You know, when you talk about these, albeit subtle, but invisible interactions between these beings and us that happens on a daily basis, people need to realize, you know, why do I feel this way? Is this really my thinking, or is this thought being put in my head?
Yes.
And, you know, because I've read, the first few chapters, yesterday I was having this thought as I closed my front door. And I actually stopped and said, is this really my thought? Because I don't think this way.
Yeah.
And then I said, I discount that thought. You know, whenever a negative thought comes in my head, I just say out loud, I discount that thought.
And they lift, don't they? Your mood lifts.
Absolutely.
You suddenly feel...
As soon as you acknowledge it's gone.
Yes. Yes. Or sometimes you'll be shown the source of that thought. If you are inexplicably depressed or angry suddenly, if you ask where the thought's coming from, the phone will ring or you'll receive an email and somebody will say, I'm depressed,
mm-hmm,
or I'm angry about this. And they have a connection to you. And once you acknowledge where that thought's coming from, it lifts completely and disappears because it's not yours.
Absolutely.
But we're all part of the same thing. It's as though we're in this gigantic spider's web of energy. And if somebody thinks in our direction, it's not just their thoughts that reach us, but it's their emotions, their emotional state and their challenges of life. And we sense them because we're the same thing. We pick them up.
Right.
So we have to say, as you quite rightly said, that's not part of me. Thank you very much. I do not acknowledge it and move on. But we have to understand that is what we are capable of. In the same way that we know on a very surface level when someone's about to write to us or someone's about to ring us on the phone, there's a greater implication to that in that we can pick up the sorrows and woes and upsets of others that are connected to us. As a medium, and this must happen to you, Maria, all the time.
Oh, absolutely.
Many people. Sorry.
I said absolutely. I mean, I get bombarded when I go out. That's why, you know, I kind of like being sequestered in my house. You know, we had this huge snowstorm last month. Everybody in my entire town, we were all trapped inside our houses for 4 days. Okay. There was so much snow that you couldn't go or do anything. I couldn't even see my staircase. Okay. And it was funny because after all that, everybody was bitching about being locked in their house and being sequestered. And one of my close friends said, except Maria, because she likes being alone. And the truth of the matter is, I didn't mind it at all. You know, I had some good wine in the house. I had some good food. I got books to read, things to do. But you're right, because, you know, I had somebody visit with their daughter, and the daughter was going through a lot of stress and strife, as young people do. And there they were sitting in my living room just dumping all this crap. And, you know, I usually have patience for people, but I was sitting there putting myself out of body, going into the zone so I wouldn't have to attach to all that crap. But once they left, I cleansed my house. I said, you know, this is not my crap, and I don't want that energy in my house. So I cleared it out right away. And listen, people, there's a lot of ways you can do that. You know, you can smudge your house. You can put some holy water around it, whatever works for you. But I generally don't allow that in my living space, because my living space is my sanctuary from the world. Because, I mean, the minute I walk in the gym, everybody wants to hammer on me. What do you think about this? What do you think about this going on in the news? And sometimes I just tell them, listen, I'm just here to relax today. You know, some of the times I'll engage with them, but most of the time I just want to relax. So I just shut down. I mean, I literally shut down. I can shut down my personality like I'm not even there and no one will talk to me.
But
you need to do that for self-preservation.
Yes. I mean, there are many people that obviously think of me and think that I can solve the situations in their lives. No, I can't.
Right.
But the information in the books from Joseph can. That's the distinction. But I do pick up those thoughts. And because we are international, I pick them up at all times of day and night.
Mm-hmm.
I have to politely say, look, it's not about me. I'm not a guru. I am just someone who has brought through this information. It's the information that will empower you. It's the information
that
will empower you. So go and read it. You know?
Exactly. I say that to my students all the time. Believe me, I tell them. I said, look, I know I am the most unlikely guru you might have ever expected in your life. So I just feel like I'm proof that the universe has a great sense of humor. So I go with that. You know, you used in, and I'm sure you did it deliberately, and I don't want you to think that I didn't notice it. In the book, you talk about the books and the information, giving you the courage and knowledge to reconnect yourself with who you really are. Now, when I use the term remember, I do it the same way. Because people really think that the part of their oversoul that's inside their little body computer here is all they are. When it's not, it's less than, you know, the little fingernail on your pinky finger of your oversoul. Yeah. And people need to remember everything they are. Everything they are, everybody they've been, everything they're going to be. It's not just who you are right now. I'm not just Maria Heller.
Yes, and not just the tiny life that we're living at the moment. We are all things. We are part of the universe and beyond the universe. We are bright, shining, as you said, balls of light. I've seen spirits as balls of light, as you have, Maria.
Yes.
I've seen people that are so brilliant in terms of light that your physical eyes can't take them in.
Mm-hmm.
There's a vague, shimmering outline because they are such great, shining beings of light. But every person listening to this show is such a being of light at core. And will be that being of light fully expressed at some point in the future, but can access that being of light, that greater self, right now. Can go within and start to make friends with their greater self, with who they really are. And isn't that better than rushing to climb up the promotional ladder? Isn't that better than visiting the shopping mall every weekend to get a fix that is temporary from new clothes?
Right.
Isn't that better than spending all those hard-earned savings on a huge car that's destroying the earth? That's not who you are. That's not where you came from. That's not what you are now. That's not where you're going to. It's time to, as you say, remember, expand again your vision. Mm-hmm. Look through the angelic eyes that are yours by divine right and see things in a different way for yourself and for everyone else.
Absolutely. I mean, listen, there's some pleasure and entertainment in doing, finding out, you know, about your past lives. But to me, that's still backwards thinking, you know, and people, yes. You know, I've been recognized by different people and they'll tell me who I was in a past life, which I already knew. Okay. And they're like, well, why aren't you talking about that or this and that? And I said, because I'm having a hard enough time being Maria Heller. Okay. I don't need to go backwards. All right. I like going, I'm a future forward person. You know, where people are, spirituality is not about being entertained. It's about giving you knowledge, and knowledge becomes power, and knowledge becomes wisdom when you share it with other people.
Yes. And becomes your new way of life. Spirituality should become the ultimate way of life for you. That transforms the way that you live, so that you never look at anything in the way that you did before you discovered the spiritual path. And not to worship gurus and not to want to become part of a club, but to become who you are. And that is freedom.
Right.
That is absolute freedom. And then, having rediscovered who you are, you can't help but want to help other people to rediscover who they are. Because you realize that you and other people are part of the same organism. You're a different viewpoint, yes, but you are the same organism. So, you know, how can you have your new viewpoint without sharing that viewpoint in terms of the light that you send out for everyone else?
Mm-hmm.
We're all in the same boat. We're all suffering in the same way. We've all got to get out. So your spiritual path is ultimately not for you. It's for you in that you rediscover who you are, but ultimately it's so that you can help everyone else rediscover who they are too.
Absolutely. You know, I get a lot of crap from people that think that I should separate my spirituality from what I cover on my news shows, my politics, right. My world politics, and they see it as a conflict. They don't see it as it's all part and parcel together, because you have to know everything that's going on, because it adds to knowledge, and knowledge is power, as you say in your book. So for me, that's just another aspect of myself. I have millions of aspects to myself, but one doesn't negate or interfere with the other. To me, they're synchronistic.
We are multifaceted. And we can inject divinity into everything that we do to color and brighten and illuminate everything we do. And it's back again to that constant dialogue with the divinity within, with the greater self, and constant prayer in the true sense of prayer. Not prayer that says, oh, I worship you, or prayer that says, I need this new car, or I need this holiday, but prayer that says, I'm one with you. How do we create harmony in these situations? How do we infuse these situations with God light, with divinity? How do we resolve things peacefully? How do we resolve things non-violently? How do we come together? Again, how do we remember billions of angelic souls? How do we remember who we are? How do we acknowledge our roots, our spiritual roots? What do we do? So constant prayer, constant connection with the divine within, constant need for a need or a request is better than need. Request for guidance, and then acting upon that guidance from the heart.
Well, you know, one of the things I learned from you, which is kind of like a shortcut, if something, you know, starts getting my blood pressure going, which takes a lot, but if I start having palpitations over something, I immediately just say to myself, I am, God is. And I just keep saying it. I just keep saying it over and over again until it sounds like a rotating sentence. And it doesn't take more than a minute or two to calm myself down. And that's, for me, is a reality check. God is, I am. I am God is. It's like, it's all the same.
The same thing.
You're right. So, you know, I teach and I have for years, you know, spirituality is a very simple thing. It's not, you know, deep, convoluted thoughts and principles that don't make any sense. You know, it can be very simple, and spirituality, real spirituality, should be fun. You know,
it's not spiritual.
Right. You know, and I tell people that if somebody wrote a book and the words are so big you can't make any sense out of it, it can't be a really good spiritual book. Okay, because spirituality is very simple. It's very natural.
Yes.
You know, the world is made you feel unnatural. Right. But it is very natural, and people need to get that. Like for me, it's every day, you know. Every day I talk to the trees. Every day I notice the new flowers budding, and I say, thank you for sharing your beauty with me. You know, some people may think that that's a crazy thing to do, but for me, it's like I feel like I have a gift by having eyeballs that can actually see so much beauty, you know. I have a drive between here and Phoenix. It's Highway 87. It's one of the most magnificent, beautiful drives I've ever been on. And anybody that drives up to see me says the same thing. And I can honestly tell you, Michael, in 20 years, every time I drive that, I give thanks for having eyes to see it.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
You know, to see the majestic.
For the food we have to eat.
Exactly.
Thank you for the roof over our heads, and thank you for the health that we have. Thank you because we are looked after in so many situations, and we fail to see that normally.
Absolutely.
Yeah, gratitude.
Absolutely. And listen, you know, I send gratitude even at night, you know, when I send out my distant Reiki. I don't just send it to people here that have asked for it.
Yes.
I send it to all the people that came before me. I send it to all the people that will come after me. I send it to my higher self. And, of course, you're included in that.
Thank you.
My group is always
included
in that.
Thank you so much.
Hey, listen, we can all use all the help we can get, but, you know, we have to keep our sanity. And I think the only way to do that, truthfully, for me, what works for me is nature. It always has, always will.
Yes. Yes.
You know.
To realize that we're one with everything.
Right. Whether it's the little basil.
Our creations are transient or illusion.
Right. Whether it's the little basil plant on my kitchen windowsill that my granddaughter bought me, thinking it would be enough to make pesto. I said, Jenna, I need about 10 of those plants to make a bottle of pesto. But I kept the plant because it reminds me of her, and I can't believe it's still alive. It's been alive for 2 months. I haven't even transplanted it or anything.
Yes, but you talk to it, of course.
Of course I talk to it, and I water it, and I love it. Different than, you know, the trees on my property or the wildflowers along the road. I mean, you know, this earth is screaming beauty and life, but the humans are missing they're not getting the message.
Yes, we pop the worms back that come out in the rain. We find them on the road, and if they're still alive, we pop them back in the soil. And people might think, why are you doing that? Because those worms are part of us.
Exactly.
Because that is an act of love. Because that's how we should approach every living thing on this planet. Because it's natural, as you say. It's a way of life.
Well,
and that's something that we need to build in, too. Respect for all forms of life. Love for all forms of life. Who are as equally important in the divine scheme of things as we are.
Absolutely. Michael, we're out of time. This was like another quick hour. But I am looking forward to getting more into the book when we speak again next.
Yes, indeed. I look forward to that, Maria.
Me too. You take good care.
And you. God bless. Bye-bye now.
Bye. Michael Reiki. Check his work out at josephspeaks.com. I don't think there's any book of his that I don't recommend. And like I said, I'm glad he wrote them, so I don't have to because I have enough work happening here. So I hope you enjoyed the show as much as we did. And again, the book is The Spaces Between, Unseen Forces That Shape Your Life. And I'll see you guys tomorrow when I'm back with the news of this reality.
Thank you for listening and supporting The Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.